This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. The result of the special election in Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district is too close to call, even though Democrat Connor Lamb declared victory early this morning. Republican Rick Saccone has not given up and has promised to explore all legal options. Lamb leads Saccone by some 600 votes. That was about of an hour ago in a district where Donald Trump trounced Hillary Clinton in 2016 by 20 percentage points. In fact, the 18th has been solidly Republican through several election cycles. We asked Dave Weigel to join us. He's politics reporter for The Washington Post. He's been covering this race. It's considered a kind of report card on President Trump, who visited the district two times to support Saccone. Dave Weigel joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Dave, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Yes, good to be here. Thank you.
So what are people waiting for? There are a couple hundred ballots out, right?
There are not enough ballots to change the result if this result holds. The Lamb victory in everything cast so far is bigger, about three times bigger than the absentee ballots left from the smallest county, and that they're supposed to count a little bit later today. And there are some military and provisional ballots with Republicans trying to figure out whether they're going to make a fight over this. They could sue, they could demand machines be impounded, things of that nature. But this is a district that is literally going to disappear by the end of the year.
And that's because the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has redistricted this district.
Yeah.
So whoever...
We've
actually done deep dives on this,
Dave.
So you don't have to go too deep on it. But it is interesting that this is whoever wins this, and it looks like Connor Lamb has it, will serve until, what, the end of the year, and then this 18th district essentially goes away.
Yeah, it's a special election, so whoever wins a new district in November becomes a congressman. Lamb and Saccone currently live in different districts when on the new map, and Saccone is likely to run in a very conservative seat that's been created, and Lamb is likely to run in a seat. It's about 50-50 as opposed to, 20-point slanted Republican.
Let me just give out the phone number to join our conversation, a race that has gotten a lot of attention, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So, Dave, how was Connor Lamb able to garner so many votes, especially after Donald Trump did so well in 2016?
Well, the Democrats realized early that Rick Saccone created vulnerabilities that were not there for Trump and were not there for Tim Murphy, the congressman who had resigned. Murphy had, like Trump, broken with his party on some labor rights issues. He'd been endorsed by the AFL-CIO when he ran for office. He was pro-tariff. He was pro-steel. He was pro-minor pensions. Just a number of issues that he broke from, let's say, Paul Ryan on. And Rick Saccone was more of a Tea Party Republican who didn't do that, who personally was veered very, very rapidly between kind of friendly uncle and a very abrasive conservative, especially with unions. He made no effort whatsoever to win these guys over. So Democrats looked at this. There are a lot of people who are lifelong Democrats in the district, lifelong union members who broke, not just for Trump, but they'd voted for Mitt Romney. They kind of left the party over gun rights and abortion and other issues. And the theory Democrats had, and I was there in November when they nominated Lamb at their convention, they decided if somebody's threaded this needle and ran as a pro-labor, not necessarily pro-choice, not necessarily anti-gun Democrat, then he could at least have a conversation with people. And then from there, they just ran a massive ground operation, the Democrats plus the labor unions.
Well, and it does go to show that it's important to pick someone who fits a district. We've talked about Connor Lamb before. He would not do particularly well in Philadelphia, for instance, but
no.
Clearly he broke through some barriers in Western Pennsylvania.
He did. Not the way that Democrats have maybe 20 years ago. If you look at this district, these are voters who, there are people who voted for John Murtha and for Murtha's successor, Mark Kritz, who then did not vote for Connor Lamb or did not turn out. He did much better with suburban voters. And I met personally a lot of Republicans in the suburbs in Allegheny County who had voted reliably Republican until maybe 2016, and they were done. It wasn't just Trump. They thought the party had swung too far to the right on guns and other issues. So he put together this coalition that was just enough rural white Democrats, not all the ones from 10 years ago, but just enough, plus convincing these suburban Republicans that if they had problems with the direction of the country, they could trust him to work with both parties and move past them.
Well, I know that Saccone, the Republicans tried to paint him with the Pelosi brush, but he wasn't really having any parts of that.
No, he wasn't. And there's a Republican spin that I just came from their party's, the House Republicans meeting, where they came out in lockstep describing how they looked at a race where the Democrat ran as a Republican. He didn't run as a Republican. He ran as an FDR Democrat. And I say that because he often would quote FDR, who has not been on the ballot for a long time.
No, he hasn't.
No, he would run as a pro-Social Security, pro-Medicare, let's not keep cutting taxes so that those programs are in jeopardy, Democrat. And even on abortion and guns, he was slippery in ways that, this is a thing that Saccone failed to do, slippery in ways he was never pinned down. He was personally pro-life. He's a bit like Tim Kaine or Joe Biden, that he's not comfortable with abortion, but he didn't want new restrictions. And on gun control, he didn't, in the aftermath of mass shootings, want to panic and pass anything in a hurry. But he was basically for the Joe Manchin, Pat Toomey bill. So he was moderate on those issues. Not really. I wouldn't say conservative on anything. He was moderate on guns and abortion, and reliably kind of FDR liberal on economics.
And although he didn't bite when asked about the president, he did support the tariffs that the president approved last week.
He is, and I actually thought this is a very telling moment in the spin around the race, as Republicans, led by the party's chairman, Ron McDaniel, started to say on Friday that Lamb was running as a Republican who supported the tariffs. Most Republicans don't support the tariffs. Republican voters, yes, but Paul Ryan doesn't, Marco Rubio doesn't, Ron Johnson doesn't. We could go Pat Toomey, who's, again, the senator from Pennsylvania, does not support the tariffs. So it was a divisive issue among Republican elites, not their voters. And actually, the president didn't do Saccone a ton of favors by coming to the district, delivering a speech, and mentioning in the speech that Lamb was with him on the tariffs.
And most of that speech, and we did a show about that earlier this week, most of that speech was really about Donald Trump and less about Rick Saccone.
Yes, and you saw Republicans starting really a month ago, saying that this is a weak candidate who is blowing the race. And they were saying so on campaign fundamental issues. He was not terribly exciting on the stump, but lots of people aren't very exciting on the stump. He didn't have big rallies. Lots of people don't have big rallies. Mm-hmm. As a retail campaigner, he really look, I've covered Congress for a long time. He's in the 50th percentile of members of people who end up getting into Congress. He's kind of punchy, mostly friendly. Was not a terrible campaigner, but he didn't like raising money, in part because in the Tea Party wave in 2010, he flipped a Democratic seat with very little money, and he was very proud of this. He just didn't believe this conventional wisdom that you needed to match your opponent dollar for dollar. So he raised less than $1 million, which, years ago was enough to win a House seat. Lamb had was a pretty good fundraiser on his own, but then also very good at leveraging the idea of flipping this district to national Democratic donors. And he got about 80,000 donations for this House race. Saccone did not. The point I'd make about all that with regard to national Republicans, the president's very good at raising money for the RNC, which is not something he ran on doing. He ran as a self-funder. It's confusing to me as a reporter, and I've got a good answer, why he didn't just tweet, hey, here's how to donate to Rick Saccone, something like that.
Yeah. Interesting. Let me just quickly reintroduce you, Dave. That's Dave Weigel. He's politics reporter for The Washington Post, and we are talking about the special election yesterday, Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district. And even though Democrat Connor Lamb has declared victory, the race has not been called yet. It is just that close. And again, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Dave, we have two emails, essentially the same question. When do you think this race will be called? And do you have any idea if it's really provisional ballots, absentee ballots? Is the plan to count everything up today?
The last I've heard from, well, yes, the plan for today is that the smallest county, Green, has about 200 votes left. They're going to count those, and we'll have every ballot that people are aware of as of today is going to be counted. Democrats expect when that's all over, they're going to lead by at least 550-something votes. I'd point out that's a lead 27 times bigger than the one, proportionately, than George Bush had in Florida over Al Gore. So not the kind of number that flips in a recount. But Republicans are not announcing yet, but they're leaving the option open to file a lawsuit, to say that there are people whose votes might have been changed, to gum up the works, to... And the game here is, if this all sounds surreal about a seat that is literally going to disappear.
Yeah, exactly.
My sense is that it would be, look, Lamb and Saccone both need to run in new districts. They have 6 days to get 1,000 signatures. I think they might be trying to muddy up Lamb to cast aspersions on his victory for when he runs the next seat over. I am not sure if it's the best use of resources for a party that already kind of set $10 million on fire in the race, but maybe they'll do it.
Well, much has been made, and maybe too much has been made, that this is really a referendum or a blueprint or a report card on the president. Dave, do you see it that way?
So for some voters it is, and this is the thing. Republicans have been saying, especially this morning at their meeting, look, Lamb was not as liberal as a lot of the candidates we think they're going to nominate. So we can get he got away with some things that our challengers won't. But Democrats are very tolerant right now of candidates who are not 100% liberal litmus test on every issue. And even I was talking to Bernie Sanders about this yesterday, and even he was fine. He's somebody who's backing primary challengers in some places. He's totally fine with some Democrats running as moderates if they have to. In the district, there was no evidence that liberal Democrats stayed home, and the Republicans trying to not make them stay home, but convince them to stay home. The biggest Republican super PAC sent two pieces of mail to voters, which I saw. One was sarcastically thanking Conor Lamb for not wanting new gun control, and one was it was a different frame, but it was basically accusing Lamb of turning his back on workers and unions because he didn't want a $15 minimum wage. And so if you look at Twitter,
Was that true, though?
He didn't want a $15 minimum wage, but unions were fine with it. Labor unions were, they took what they could get. He was for a higher minimum wage. But it was not an issue. So you might see on Twitter or cable or something else people complaining about their Democrats not being bold enough. But Democratic voters are so furious, so energized, that they will put up with a lot in order to turn out. They did it with John Ossoff. They did it with Ralph Northam. They did it with Doug Jones, true to form, has voted with Republicans on a lot of bills since he got to the Senate. They just want to take back power, and they're willing to vote for any Democrat to make that happen. On whether it was a referendum for everyone in the district, I mean, this is the problem, and it's a problem Republicans took advantage of under Barack Obama. There's really not much evidence that when Donald Trump says, go vote for this candidate, he supports my agenda, that he can pull out most of his base. He pulls out about half, and Democrats are getting closer to two-thirds or 75% of the people that they've voted for Hillary Clinton. That's happening from race to race. You kind of look at these margins. What you need to look at is the turnout. And, for example, in this district, and this won't really change based on the final ballots, in Allegheny County, which was the Democratic stronghold, which has swung very Democratic in the Trump era, the turnout was about 67% of what it was in 2016. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the district, it was about 60%. And in a close race, that's the margin. And that's the Republican rural voters. There are a lot of them who turned out for Trump, and they're going to turn out for Trump again in 2016, most likely. But you can't get them to vote for somebody who's not Trump. They just don't care enough. Or maybe it doesn't sound logical if, like me, you're obsessed with politics and cover it every second of every day. But it is a nut they have not cracked yet.
And that's Dave Wagle. I'm Marty Moscoen. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Dave, let me just play something. This is something that Rick Saccone said yesterday. I believe as he was voting, but it was something that got a fair amount of play. And let's play it, and we'll talk about it.
They said that the other side is energized. Let me tell you, they're energized for hate for our president. I've talked to so many of these on the left, and they have a hatred for our president. I tell you, many of them have a hatred for our country. And I'll tell you some more. My wife and I saw it again today. They have a hatred for God. It's amazing. You see it when I'm talking to them. It's disturbing to me.
Dave, does that work? A hatred for your country, hatred for God, if you don't vote Republican?
Well, again, that works for someone like Donald Trump sometimes. It does not work for everybody else. And there are not many people who can carry that off. And there are also, if I should say, not many people who have an opponent that energizes their base the way that Donald Trump did in 2016. That comment, that was very typical of Saccone, because he was a very proud conservative on every issue, didn't really plan his speeches. He'd have a couple notes about job numbers and stuff, but then would kind of riff on whatever had irritated him in that moment. And he explained to reporters, I should say, when he was voting yesterday morning, because that clip got around. He said that on Monday night. That clip got around Monday evening. He said, well, that was based on what people were saying on Twitter and social media about him. So it wasn't like people were coming up to him and yelling at him. He just was very bristly about the opposition he was getting. And as Republicans try to argue that this race won't have any impact in other places, look, there are a lot of Republicans who have not had tough races ever or in years. And it is not fun when somebody comes up on you. A lot of Democrats in 2010 lost their cool because they were getting pressure they never got. And Saccone, guy who won four elections in this area, cooked under that pressure in a way he had not before.
A couple more questions before I have to say goodbye to you. One is, do you then see the rise of unions, or at least unions playing a more pivotal role in some of these elections?
Well, they always have been, with some exceptions. Again, so a key difference in this race is that the Mine Workers of America, United Mine Workers of America, which did not endorse Hillary Clinton, which did not really endorse Barack Obama, did not even try to sell their members on those policies. They had one issue in this race, and that is they want a Congress that will pass the miners' pension protections. They have allies on both parties, but they do not have – Democrats are more amenable to that than Republicans, even in coal states like Kentucky. And so they endorsed him. They went all out for him. Other unions went all out again because they worried about the threat of right to work. And I would point out that we expect, because of the composition of the Supreme Court, is going to find a very innovative legal reasoning this year to say that you violate the First Amendment if you are a public sector union that compels dues from all your members.
Yeah.
So they're going to take a direct strike at unions based on the Democratic Party. The president who won, he did not do very well with public sector unions. He did well with more kind of building trades. He has a personal pitch and appeal, but as long as there's not an infrastructure bill moving, and as long as what is moving is frontal assaults on the labor movement, that is a big problem for Republicans. That is something that's going to energize them around Democrats, even if they kind of were sleeping before.
Well, and Dave, I was going to ask you about the role of suburbs, but you said that Conor Lamb did pretty well in suburbs, and the suburbs of Philadelphia have played a pretty interesting and important role when it comes to Congress as well. I'm going to let that just sit there. Dave Weigel, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Politics reporter for The Washington Post, and he joined us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Taking another short break, and then we'll be talking about Rex Tillerson. He's out of a job. What happened? We'll be right back.